He even wondered what the blue sickness was. Choking, perhaps, or apoplexy. And if he was the chaplain that Eloise's mother-in-law was so eager to replace. It was usual for noble households to travel with their own priests. Father Roche was apparently the local priest, probably uneducated and possibly even illiterate, though she had understood his Latin perfectly well, and he had been kind. He had held her hand and told her not to be afraid. There are nice people in the Middle Ages, Mr. Dunworthy, she thought. Father Roche, and Eloise, and Agnes. My father said he would bring me a magpie when he comes from Bath, Agnes said. Adeliza has a tercel. She lets me hold him sometimes. She held her bent arm up and out, the dimpled fist closed, as if a falcon were perched on her imaginary gauntlet. I have a hound. What is your hound's name? Kivrin asked. I call him Blackie, Agnes said, though Kivrin was certain that was only the interpreter's version. More likely, she had said Blackamon or Blackin. He is black. Have you a hound? Kivrin was too surprised to answer. She had spoken and made herself understood. Agnes hadn't even acted like her pronunciation was unusual. She had spoken without thinking about the interpreter or waiting for it to translate. And perhaps that was the secret. Nay. I have no hound, she said finally, trying to duplicate what she'd done before. I will teach my magpie to talk. I will teach him to say, good morrow, Agnes. Where is your hound? Kivrin said, trying again. The words sounded different to her, lighter, with that murmuring French inflection she had heard in the woman's speech. Do you wish to see Blackie? He's in the stable, Agnes said. It sounded like a direct response, but the way Agnes talked it was difficult to tell. She might simply have been volunteering information. To be sure, Kivrin would have to ask her something completely off the subject and something with only one answer. Agnes was stroking the soft fur of the bed covering and humming a toneless little tune. What is your name? Kivrin asked, trying to let the interpreter control her words. It translated her modern sentence into something like, how are you, Eclepid? Which she was not sure was correct, but Agnes didn't hesitate. Agnes, the little girl said promptly, my father says I may have a tercel when I am old enough to ride a mare. I have a pony. She stopped stroking the fur, propped her elbows on the edge of the bed and rested her chin in her little hands. I know your name, she said, sounding smugly pleased. It's Catherine. What? Kivrin said blankly. Catherine? How had they come up with Catherine? Her name was supposed to be Isabel. Was it possible that they thought they knew who she was? Rosamond said none knew your name, she went on looking smug, but I heard Father Roche tell Garwin you were called Catherine. Rosamond said you couldn't speak, but yet you can. Kivrin had a sudden image of the priest bending over her, his face obscured by the flames that seemed constantly in front of her, saying in Latin, what is your name that you might be shriven? And she, trying to form the word, though her mouth was so dry she could hardly speak, afraid she would die, and they would never know what had happened to her. Are you called Catherine? Agnes was demanding. And she could hear the little girl's voice clearly under the interpreter's translation. It sounded just like Kivrin. Aye, Kivrin said, and felt like crying. Blackie has a... Agnes said. The interpreter didn't catch the word. Correct, Chevette? It's red. Do you wish to see it? And before Kivrin could stop her, she went running out through the still partly open door. Kivrin waited, hoping she would come back, and that her Karet wasn't alive, wishing she'd asked where she was and how long she'd been here, though Agnes was probably too young to know. She looked no more than 3, though of course she would be much smaller than a modern 3-year-old. 5, then, or possibly 6. I should have asked her how old she was, Kivrin thought, and then remembered that she might not know that either. Joan of Arc hadn't known how old she was when the Inquisitors asked her at her trial. At least she could ask questions, Kivrin thought. The interpreter was not broken after all. It must have been temporarily stymied by the strange pronunciations, or affected somehow by her fever. But it was all right now, and Garwin knew where the drop was and could show it to her. She sat up straighter among the pillows so she could see the door. The effort hurt her chest and made her dizzy, and her head ached. She anxiously felt her forehead and then her cheeks. And they felt warm, but that could be because her hands were cold. It was icy in the room, and on her excursion to the chamber pot she hadn't seen any sign of a brazier or even a warming pan. Had warming pans been invented yet? They must have. Otherwise, how would people have survived the little ice age? It was so cold. She was beginning to shiver. Her fever must be going back up. Were they supposed to come back? In History of Med, she had read about fevers breaking, and after that the patient was weak, but the fever didn't come back, did it? Of course it did. What about malaria? Shivering, headaches, sweats, recurring fever. Of course they came back. Well, it obviously wasn't malaria. Malaria had never been endemic to England. Mosquitoes didn't live in Oxford in midwinter, and never had, and the symptoms were wrong. She hadn't experienced any sweating, and the shivering she was having was due to fever. Typhus produced headache and a high fever, and it was transmitted by body lice and rat fleas, both of which were endemic to England in the Middle Ages, and probably endemic to the bed she was lying on. But the incubation period was too long, nearly 2 weeks. Typhoid fever's incubation period was only a few days, and it caused headache, aching in the limbs, and high fever too. She didn't think it was a recurring fever, but she remembered it was normally highest at night. That must mean it went down during the day, and then up again in the evening. Kivrin wondered what time it was. Eloise had said, "It grows dark," and the light from the linen-covered window was faintly blue. But the days were short in December. It might only be mid-afternoon. She felt sleepy, but that was no sign either. She had slept off and on all day. Drowsiness was a symptom of typhoid fever. She tried to remember the others from Dr. Aron's short course in medieval medicine. Nosebleeds, coated tongue, rose-colored rash. The rash wasn't supposed to appear until the 7th or 8th day, but Kivrin pulled her shift up and looked at her stomach and chest. No rash, so it couldn't be typhoid, or smallpox. With smallpox, the pox started appearing by the 2nd or 3rd day. She wondered what had happened to Agnes. Perhaps someone had belatedly had the good sense to bar her from the sick room. Or perhaps the unreliable Maisry was actually watching her. Or more likely, she had stopped to see her puppy in the stable, and forgotten she was going to show her Shavot to Kivrin. The plague started out with a headache and a fever. It can't be the plague, Kivrin thought. You don't have any of the symptoms. Buboes that grew to the size of oranges. A tongue that swelled till it filled the whole mouth. Subcutaneous hemorrhages that turned the whole body black. You don't have the plague. It must be some sort of flu. It was the only disease that came on so suddenly, and Dr. Ahrens had been upset over Mr. Gilchrist moving the date up, because the antivirals wouldn't take full effect until the 15th, and she'd only have partial immunity. It had to be the flu. What was the treatment for the flu? Antivirals, rest, fluids. Well then, rest, she told herself, and closed her eyes. She did not remember falling asleep, but she must have, because the two women were in the room again talking, and Kivrin had no memory of their having come in.
What, said Garwin, the old woman said.
She was doing something with a bowl and a spoon, mashing the spoon against the side of it. The iron-bound casket sat open beside her, and she reached into it, pulled out a small cloth bag, sprinkled the contents into the bowl, and stirred it again. He found naught among her belongings that might tell us the lady's origins. Her goods had all been stolen, the chest broken open, and emptied of all that might identify her. But he said her wagon was of rich make. Stethys, she is of good family.
And Stethys, her family searches for her, the old woman said.
She had set down the bowl and was tearing cloth with a loud ripping sound.
We must send to Oxenford and tell them she lies safe with us.
No, Eloise said, and Kivrin could hear the resistance in her voice. Not to Oxenford.
What have you heard?
I have heard naught, Eloise said, but that my lord bade us keep here. He will be here within the week if all goes well.
If all had gone well, he would have been here now.
The trial had scarce begun. Mayhap he's on his way home even now.
Or mayhap...
Another one of those untranslatable names. Torquil?
Waits to be hanged, and my son with him. He should not have meddled in such a matter.
He is a friend, and guiltless of the charges.
He is a fool, and my son more fool for testifying on his behalf. A friend would have bade him leave Bath.
She ground the spoon into the side of the bowl again.
I have need of mustard for this, she said, and stepped to the door. Maisry, she called, and went back to tearing the cloth. Found Garwin or to the lady's attendants?
Eloise sat down on the window seat. No. Nor of their horses? Nor hers? A girl with a pocked face and greasy hair hanging over it came in. Surely this couldn't be Maisry, who dallied with stable boys instead of watching her charges. She bent her knee in a curtsy that was more of a stumble and said,
What wouldst you? Lower to Magin?
Oh, no, Kivrin thought. What's wrong with the interpreter now?
Fetch me the pot of mustard from the kitchen and tarry not,
the old woman said, and the girl started for the door.
Where are Agnes and Rosamond? Why are they not with you?
She remorts me, she said sullenly. Eloise stood up. Speak up, she said sharply.
They hide
something
from me.
It wasn't the interpreter after all. It was simply the difference of the Norman English the nobles spoke and the still Saxon-sounded dialect of the peasants, neither of which sounded anything like the Middle English Mr. Latimer had blithely taught her. It was a wonder the interpreter was picking up anything at all.
I was seeking them when Lady Hermione called, good lady,
Maisie said, and the interpreter got it all. Though it was taking several seconds, it gave an imbecilic slowness to Maisra's speech, which might or might not be appropriate. Where did you look for them? In the stable? Eloise said, and brought her hands together on either side of Maisra's head like a pair of cymbals. Maisry howled and clapped a dirty hand to her left ear. Kivrin shrank back against the pillows. Go and fetch the mustard to Lady Hermione and find you Agnes.
Maisry nodded, not looking particularly frightened, but still holding her ear. She scrambled another curtsy and went out no more quickly than she'd come in. She seemed less upset by the sudden violence than Kivrin was, and Kivrin wondered if Lady Hermione would get her mustard any time soon. It was the swiftness and the calmness of the violence that had surprised her. Eloise had not even seemed angry, and as soon as Maisry was gone, she went back to the window seat, sat down, and said quietly, "The lady could not be moved, though her family did come. She can bide with us until my husband returns. He will be here by Christmas, surely." There was noise on the stairs. Apparently she'd been wrong, Kivrin thought, and the ear-boxing had done some good. Agnes rushed in, clutching something to her chest. "Agnes," Eloise said, "what do you hear?"
"I brought my..."
The interpreter still didn't have it.
"Charrette?"
"To show the lady."
"You are a wicked child to hide from Maisry and come hence to disturb the lady,"
Hermione said.
"She suffers greatly from her injuries."
"But she told me she wished to see it."
She held it up. It was a toy, two-wheeled cart, painted red and gilt.
"God punishes those who bear false witness with everlasting torment,"
Lady Hermione said, grabbing the little girl roughly.
"The lady cannot speak. You know full well."
"She spoke to me,"
Agnes said sturdily. "Good for you," Kivrin thought. "Everlasting torment. What horrible things to threaten a child with."
But this was the Middle Ages, when priests talked constantly of the last days and the final judgment, of the pains of hell.
"She told me she wished to see my wagon," Agnes said. "She said she did not have a hound."
"You are making up tales," Eloise said. "The lady cannot speak." And Kivrin thought, "I have to stop this. They'll box her ears too." She pushed herself up on her elbows. The effort left her breathless.
"I spoke with Agnes,"
she said, praying the interpreter would do what it was supposed to. If it chose to blink out again at this moment and ended up getting Agnes a beating, that would be the last straw. "I bade her bring her cart to me." Both women turned and looked at her. Eloise's eyes widened. The old woman looked astonished and then angry, as if she thought Kivrin had deceived them.
"I told you,"
Agnes said, and marched over to the bed with the wagon. Kivrin lay back against the pillows, exhausted.
"What is this place?"
she asked. It took Eloise a moment to recover herself.
"You rest safely in the house of my lord and husband."
The interpreter had trouble with the name. It sounded like Guillaume Duvray, or possibly Duvreau. Eloise was looking at her anxiously.
"My husband Privé found you in the woods and brought you hence. You had been set upon by robbers and grievously injured. Who attacked you?"
"I know not," Kivrin said.
"I am called Eloise, and this is the mother of my husband, the Lady Hermione. What is your name?" And now was the time to tell them the whole carefully researched story.
She had told the priest her name was Catherine, but Lady Hermione had already made it clear she put no stock in anything he said. She didn't even believe he could speak Latin. Kivrin could say he had misunderstood, that her name was Isabel de Beauvrier. She could tell them she had called out her mother's, her sister's name in her delirium. She could tell them she had been praying to St. Catherine.
"Of what family are you?" Lady Hermione asked.
It was a very good story. It would establish her identity and position in society.
and would ensure that they wouldn't try to send for her family. Yorkshire was too far away, and the road north was impassable.
"Whither were you bound?"
Eloise said. Medieval had thoroughly researched the weather and the road conditions. It had rained every day for 2 weeks in December, and there had been a hard frost to freeze the mired roads till late January. But she had seen the road to Oxford. It had been dry and clear. And Medieval had thoroughly researched the colour of her dress and the prevalence of glass windows among the upper classes. They had thoroughly researched the language.
"I remember not," Kivrin said.
"Not?"
Eloise said, and turned to Lady Hermione.
"She remembers not."
"They think I'm saying not," Kivrin thought, "that I don't remember anything."
The inflection, the pronunciation didn't differentiate between the two words.
"It is her wound," Eloise said. "It has shaken her memory."
"No, nay," Kivrin said.
She was not supposed to feign amnesia. She was supposed to be Isabel de Beauvrier from the East Riding. Just because the roads were dry here didn't mean they weren't impassable farther north. And Eloise would not even let Garwin ride to Oxford to get news of her or to Bath to fetch her husband. She surely wouldn't send him to the East Riding.
"Can you not even remember your own name?"
Lady Hermione said impatiently, leaning so close Kivrin could smell her breath. It was very foul, an odour of decay. She must have rotting teeth, too.
"What is your name?"
Mr. Latimer had said Isabel was the most common woman's name in the 1300s. How common was Catherine? And Medieval didn't know the daughter's names. What if Yorkshire wasn't distant enough after all, and Lady Hermione knew the family? She would take it as further proof that she was a spy. She had better stay with the common name and tell them she was Isabel de Beauvrier. The old woman would be only too happy to believe that the priest had gotten her name wrong. It would be further proof of his ignorance, of his incompetence, further reason to send to Bath for a new chaplain. But he had held Kivrin's hand. He had told her not to be afraid. "My name is Catherine," she said. Transcript from the Doomsday Book. "I'm not the only one in trouble, Mr. Dunworthy. I think the contempts who've taken me in are too. The Lord of the Manor, Lord Guillaume, isn't here. He's in Bath, testifying at the trial of a friend of his, which is apparently a dangerous thing to do. His mother, Lady Hermione, called him a fool for getting mixed up in it, and Lady Eloise, his wife, seems worried and nervous. They've come here in a great hurry and without servants. 14th-century noblewomen had at least one lady-in-waiting apiece, but neither Eloise nor Hermione has any. And they left the children's, Guillaume's two little girls are here, nursed behind. Lady Hermione wanted to send for a new one and a chaplain, but Lady Eloise won't let her. I think Lord Guillaume must be expecting trouble and has spirited his women folk away here to keep them safe. Or possibly the trouble's already happened. Agnes, the littler of the two girls, told me about the chaplain's death and someone named Gilbert, whose head was all red. So perhaps there's already been bloodshed, and the women have come here to escape it. One of Lord Guillaume's privés has come with them, and he's fully armed. There weren't any major uprisings against Edward II in Oxfordshire in 1320. Although no one was very happy with the king and his favourite, Hugh de Spencer, and there were plots and minor skirmishes everywhere else. Two of the barons, Lancaster and Mortimer, took 63 manors away from the de Spencers that year. This year, Lord Guillaume or his friend may have got involved in one of those plots. It could be something else entirely, of course, a land dispute or something. People in the 1300s spent almost as much time in court as the contempts in the last part of the 20th century. But I don't think so. Lady Aloise jumps at every sound, and she's forbidden Lady Hermione to tell the neighbours they're here. I suppose, in one way, this is a good thing. If they aren't telling anyone they're here, they won't tell anyone about me or send messengers to try to find out who I am. On the other hand, there is the chance of armed men kicking in the door at any moment, or of Garwin, the only person who knows where the drop is, getting killed defending the manor. Break. 15th of December, 1320. Old style. The interpreter is working now, more or less, and the contempts seem to understand what I'm saying. I can understand them, though their Middle English bears no resemblance to what Mr. Latimer taught me. It's full of inflections and has a much softer French sound. Mr. Latimer wouldn't even recognize his one that April with his surest salt. The interpreter translates what the contempts say with the syntax and some of the words intact. And at first I tried to phrase what I said the same way, saying I and nay, and I remember naught of whence I came. But thinking about it, deadly. The interpreter takes forever to come up with a translation. And I stammer and struggle with the pronunciations. So I just speak modern English, and hope what comes out of my mouth is close to being right, and that the interpreter isn't slaughtering the idioms and the inflections. Heaven only knows how I sound. Like a French spy, probably. The language isn't the only thing off. My dress is all wrong, of far too fine a weave, and the blue is too bright, dyed with woad or not. I haven't seen any bright colours at all. I'm too tall, my teeth are too good, and my hands are wrong, in spite of my muddy labours at the dig. They should not only have been dirtier, but I should have chilblains. Everyone's hands, even the children's, are chapped and bleeding. It is, after all, December. December the 15th. I overheard part of an argument between Lady Hermione and Lady Eloise about getting a replacement chaplain, and Hermione said, "There is more than time enough to send. It is full 10 days till Christ's Mass." So tell Mr. Gilchrist I've ascertained my temporal location at least, but I don't know how far from the drop I am. I've tried to remember Garwin bringing me here, but that whole night is hopelessly muddled, and part of what I remember didn't happen. I remember a white horse that had bells on its harness, and the bells were playing Christmas carols, like the carillon in Carfax Tower. The 15th of December means it's Christmas Eve there, and you'll be giving your sherry party, and then walking over to St. Mary the Virgin's for the interchurch service. It's hard to comprehend that you are over 700 years away. I keep thinking that if I got out of bed, which I can't because I'm too dizzy, I think my temp is back up, and opened the door, I would find not a medieval hall, but Brazenose's lab, and all of you waiting for me. Badri and Dr. Ahrens, and you, Mr. Dunworthy, polishing your spectacles, and saying, "I told you so." I wish you were. Chapter 12. Lady Hermione did not believe Kivrin's story about having amnesia. When Agnes brought her hound, which turned out to be a tiny black puffy with huge feet, into Kivrin, she said, "This is my hound, Lady Kivrin." She held it out to Kivrin, clutching its fat middle. "You can pet him. Do you remember how?" "Yes," Kivrin said, taking the puppy out of Agnes's too tight grasp and stroking its baby soft fur. "Aren't you supposed to be at your sewing?" Agnes took the puppy back from her.
Grandmother went to chide with the steward, and Maisry went out to the stable. She twisted the puppy around to give it a kiss. So I came to speak to you. Grandmother is very angry. The steward and all his family were living in the hall when we came hence. She gave the puppy another kiss. Grandmother says it is his wife who tempts him to sin.
Grandmother?
Agnes had not said anything like grandmother. The word hadn't even existed until the 18th century. But the interpreter was taking huge, disconcerting leaps now. Though it left Agnes's mispronunciation of Catherine intact and sometimes left blanks in places where the meaning should have been obvious from context. She hoped her subconscious knew what it was doing.
Are you adulterous, Lady Kivrin?
Agnes said. Her subconscious obviously didn't know what it was doing.
What?
She asked.
Adulterous,
Agnes said. The puppy was trying desperately to squirm out of Agnes's grip.
Grandmother says you are one. She says... A wife fleeing to her lover would have good cause to remember naught.
An adulteress. Well, at least it was better than a French spy. Or perhaps Lady Hermione thought she was both. Agnes kissed the puppy again.
Grandmother said a lady had no good cause to travel through the woods in winter.
Lady Hermione was right, Kivrin thought, and so was Mr. Dunworthy. She still had not found out where the drop was, although she had asked to speak with Garwin when Lady Elwes came in the morning to bathe her temple.
He has ridden out to search for the wicked men who robbed you,
Elwes had said, putting an ointment on Kivrin's temple that smelled like garlic and stung horribly.
Do you remember aught of them?
Kivrin had shaken her head, hoping her faked amnesia wouldn't end in some poor peasant's being hanged. She could scarcely say,
no, that isn't the man,
when she supposedly couldn't remember anything.
Perhaps she shouldn't have told them she couldn't remember anything.
The probability that they would have known the Dubouvriers was very small, and her lack of an explanation had obviously made Hermione even more suspicious of her. Agnes was trying to put her cap on the puppy.
There are wolves in the woods, she said. Garwin slew one with his axe.
Agnes, did Garwin tell you of his finding me?
Kivrin asked.
Aye. Blackie likes to wear my cap, she said, tying the strings in a choking knot.
He doesn't act like it, Kivrin said.
Where did Garwin find me?
In the woods,
Agnes said. The puppy twisted out of the cap and nearly fell off the bed. She set it in the middle of the bed and lifted it by its front paws.
Blackie can dance.
Here, let me hold it,
Kivrin said, to rescue the poor thing. She cradled it in her arms.
Where in the woods did Garwin find me?
Agnes stood on tiptoe trying to see the puppy.
Blackie sleeps,
she whispered. The puppy was asleep, exhausted from Agnes's attentions. Kivrin laid it beside her on the fur bed covering.
Was the place he found me far from here?
Aye,
Agnes said, and Kivrin could tell she had no idea. This was no use. Agnes obviously didn't know anything. She would have to talk to Garwin.
Has Garwin returned?
Aye,
Agnes said, stroking the sleeping puppy.
Would you speak with him?
Yes, Kivrin said.
Are you adulteress?
It was difficult to follow Agnes's conversational jumps.
No,
she said, and then remembered she was not supposed to be able to remember anything.
I don't remember anything about who I am.
Agnes petted Blackie.
Grandmother says only adulteress would ask so boldly to speak with Garwin.
The door opened, and Rosamond came in.
They're looking for you everywhere, Simplehead,
she said, her hands on her hips. I was speaking with Lady Kivrin, Agnes said, with an anxious glance at the coverlid where Blackie lay, nearly invisible against the sable fur. Apparently hounds were not allowed inside. Kivrin pulled the rough sheet up over it so Rosamond wouldn't see. Mother said the lady must rest so that her wounds will heal, Rosamond said sternly. Come, I must tell Grandmother I found you. She led the little girl out of the room. Kivrin watched them leave, hoping fervently that Agnes wouldn't tell Lady Hermione Kivrin had asked again to speak to Garwin. She had thought she had a good excuse to talk to Garwin, that they would understand that she was anxious to find out about her belongings and her attackers. But it was unseemly for unmarried noble women in the 1300s to boldly ask to speak to young men. Eloise could talk to him because she was the head of the house with her husband gone, and his employer, and Lady Hermione was his lord's mother. But Kivrin should have waited until Garwin spoke to her and then answered him with all modesty as fits a maid. But I must talk to him, she thought. He's the only one who knows where the drop is. Agnes came dashing back in and snatched up the sleeping puppy. Grandmother was very angry. She thought I'd fallen in the well, Agnes said, and ran back out again. And no doubt Grandmother had boxed Maisry's ears because of it, Kivrin thought. Maisry had already been in trouble once today for losing Agnes, who had come to show Kivrin Lady Hermione's silver chain, which she said was a reliquary, a word that defeated the interpreter. Inside the little box, she told Kivrin, was a piece of the Shroud of St. Stephen. Maisry had had her pocked cheek slapped by Hermione for letting Agnes take the reliquary and for not watching her, though not for letting the little girl in the sick room. None of them seemed concerned at all about the little girl's getting close to Kivrin, or to be aware that they might catch what she had. Neither Eloise nor Hermione took any precautions in caring for her. The contempt hadn't understood the mechanics of disease transmission, of course. They believed it was a consequence of sin and epidemics were a punishment from God. But they had known about contagion. The motto of the Black Death had been, "Depart quickly, go far, tarry long." And there had been quarantines before that. Not here, Kivrin thought. And what if the little girls come down with this? Or Father Roche? He had been near her all through her fever, touching her, asking her name. She frowned, trying to remember that night. She had fallen off the horse, and then there was a fire. No, she had imagined that in her delirium. And the white horse. Garwin's horse was black. They had ridden through a wood and down a hill past a church, and the cutthroat had... It was no use. The night was a shapeless dream of frightening faces and bells and flames. Even the drop was hazy, unclear. There had been an oak tree and willows, and she had sat down against the wagon wheel because she felt so dizzy, and the cutthroat had... No. She had imagined the cutthroat. And the white horse. Perhaps she had imagined the church as well. She would have to ask Garwin where the drop was, but not in front of Lady Hermione, who thought she was adulterous. She had to get well, to get enough strength to get out of bed and go down to the hall, out to the stable, to find Garwin to speak to him alone. She had to get better. She was a little stronger, though she was still too weak to walk to the chamber pot unaided. The dizziness was gone, and the fever, but her shortness of breath persisted. They apparently thought she was improving, too. They had left her alone most of the morning, and Eloise had only stayed long enough to smear on the foul-smelling ointment and have me make improper advances towards Garwin, Kivrin thought.
Kivrin tried not to worry about what Agnes had told her, or why the antivirals hadn't worked, or how far the drop was, and to concentrate on getting her strength back. No one came in all afternoon, and she practiced sitting up and putting her feet over the side of the bed. When Maisry came with a rushlight to help her to the chamber pot, she was able to walk back to the bed by herself.
This ends side 2 of cassette 5 of Doomsday Book. Please fast forward to the end before loading cassette 6.